So my research pertains to the social transmission of immunity using the carpenter ant Campanotus pentavenicus as a model organism. So this research pertains to the eusocial insects, which include some wasps, bees, all the ants, and termites. And more specifically, I look at the many factors that contribute to the intense immune pressures that are placed on these eusocial insects. One is the fact that they nest and forage in very microbial-rich environments. As you can see with these wasps nesting in a rotten log, and also with these termite reproductives in their first brood, and a carpenter ant queen with her first worker, which have both carved out homes in rotting wood, which are ideal locations for microbes. Other factors that increase the risk of disease transmission and contribute to the intense pressures put on their immune systems is the fact that they live in densely populated colonies, and this leads to constant close interactions between highly related individuals, like these army ants and Nasutotermes termites, both neotropical. So we ask, how do they deal with these intense pressures that they face in their environments? And it has been shown in a number of organisms that group living actually has immune benefits, not just increased risks of disease transmission. Specifically in two cases in eusocial insects, one with Acromyrmex leaf-cutting ants and another with dampwood termites Zotermopsis angusticolis. So both of these studies used entomopathogenic fungi Metarhizium anisopliae, and they showed that individuals that were exposed to this pathogen survived significantly better when placed in groups rather than in isolation. And they contribute this to mutual grooming, which is when they actually physically remove the the spores of the fungus from the cuticle of their nestmates, and also antibiotic secretions in the case of ants with a metapleural gland and salivary glands in termites. And the second study with the termites actually showed a social transfer of immunity. And by this I mean that individuals that interacted with previously exposed nestmates actually boosted their immune systems, and they were better able to survive after a challenging dose of the fungus. And they contribute this to the transfer either through grooming or trophallaxis of non-lethal doses of the pathogen or constituents of the pathogen that act as immune elicitors. In the case of fungus, beta-glucans from the fungal cell walls, peptidoglycans from gram-positive bacteria, or lipopolysaccharides from gram-negative bacteria. Ants in particular engage in stimodial trophallaxis very frequently. This involves the regurgitation of liquid nutrients from the crop feeding nestmates. And there are a number of functions associated with stimodial trophallaxis. The main is to ensure that the entire colony is well fed. Foragers go out, collect food, and store it in their crops, and then come back to the nest and spread it throughout their nestmates, the brood, and the queen. And hydrocarbons are also transferred during trophallaxis that contribute to colony odor and the distinguishing of nestmates from non-nestmates. So we were asking, is it possible that they also transfer antimicrobial peptides or other immune elicitors through trophallaxis, effectively immunizing a colony against the widespread infection? It has been shown in European carpenter ant species that the introduction of peptidoglycans elicits a humoral immune response with the production of antimicrobial peptides, but it also increases the frequency of trophallaxis. So when they produce an immune response, instead of avoiding nestmates to reduce the risk of transmission, they actually increase this behavior. And we think that it might be because they are spreading these immune factors throughout the colony. So the basic idea is that an individual is exposed to a pathogen. This leads to the production of a humoral immune response in the form of antimicrobial peptides. These peptides or other immune elicitors are then transferred to nestmates through stimodial trophallaxis. And eventually this leads to colony-wide immunization against the widespread infection. So how do we test for this? We have been using Campanotus pentavenicus as a model organism. They are very abundant in the Northeast, and they engage in trophallaxis very frequently. And we are actually stealing the regurgitated droplet that is transferred during trophallaxis using finely pulled microcapillary tubes. And then we are looking at the protein contents of the droplets to see if there is any differences between before and after exposure, to see if they are actually incorporating immune antimicrobial peptides into the droplet that they transfer to their nestmates. For the pathogen, we're using Serratia marcescens, which is a generalist entomopathogenic gram-negative bacteria, and it has been found naturally in Camponotus pennsylvanicus. To expose them, we dip a pin in a solution of bacteria, and then we prick the intersegmental membranes between the second and third pterygites, and this effectively introduces the bacteria into the hemoseal. And we take the actual droplet samples by force regurgitation, gently squeezing the gaster and forcing the crop's contents up, and then sucking it up with the capillary tubes. And here is a gel of two individuals before and after control, which is just a pin dipped in saline solution, and there is no real differences in the protein profiles before and after. Here is a gel of individuals before and after exposure to active Serratia. And as you can see, there seems to be enhanced or possibly novel proteins between 20 and 25 kilodaltons that are not present in they're enhanced and possibly constitutive before exposure. There also seem to be some between 10 and 15 or around 15 kilodaltons that are enhanced or produced after exposure to these pathogens. And they are not in the actual protein profile of the pathogen, suggesting that they're actually produced by the ant in response to the exposure. Here's a gel of individuals from a different colony showing the same enhanced proteins around 25 kilodaltons. And again, they're not in the profile of Serratia, suggesting they are from ant origin. Similarly, we fed ants lipopolysaccharides to elicit immune response without actually infecting them or injecting them, because in Eastern European Camponotus species, injection of saline solution actually elicited the same antimicrobial enhancement in the hemolymph. So by feeding them, we avoid this. And though this gel is a lot of mirroring, there is evidence of similar proteins around 20 to 25 kilodaltons, and also around 15 kilodaltons that were produced in response to actual infection with Serratia, suggesting that they're producing these possibly immune peptides in response to the presence of the lipopolysaccharides in the Serratia cell walls. And again, they are not in the actual lipopolysaccharide protein profile, suggesting that they are actually produced by the ant. Tissue samples have also been taken to try to identify the sources of these proteins to see how they are being incorporated into the droplet. We have taken samples of the foregut, the crop, fat tissue, and also salivary glands to see if any of these are producing them and then incorporating them into the droplet that is transferred. And we have found similar proteins in the fat tissue, around 20 to 25 kilodaltons. Fat tissue in insects is a major site of antimicrobial peptide production, and the crop can actually absorb proteins from the hemoseal. So we think that it is possible that these antimicrobial peptides are being produced in the fat tissue and released into the hemolymph, and then actively absorbed into the crop before they are transferred during trophallaxis. Other sources that these proteins could be coming from, maybe the smaller proteins that we haven't seen in the fat tissue, include glands that actually contribute to, or have been known to have other contributions to trophallaxis, like the salivary gland, mandibular gland, maxillary glands, and the postpharyngeal glands. But there is no evidence of them actually producing the antimicrobial peptides yet. So some current and future experiments that are running to further investigate this is analyzing the actual antimicrobial activity of the droplets themselves. And I do this by stealing the droplets of exposed individuals or control individuals, and then placing them in wells in plates that have been seeded with bacteria to look at the clearing zones that are produced to see if there is enhanced antimicrobial activity after exposure to a pathogen. I also plan on doing survivorship analysis. And this includes placing naive ants with individuals that had either been exposed or control individuals, and having them feed the naive ants, and then challenging all the ants to see if those that were fed by exposed individuals have better for survivorship after exposure. Preliminary results suggest that this might actually be happening, but the sample size needs to be increased, and also the number of colonies used. And finally, I wish to isolate and elute these proteins from non-denaturing gels to see if they are, in fact, antimicrobial peptides. And I'd like to thank all these people for their help with my research and, of course, for the funding. And now I'd like to open up for questions.
few minutes for questions. And again, please repeat the question.
Yes.
So some campus noticed Pennsylvania just has Slovakia, and obviously they have block managing plans. So do you know if a regulation of their immune systems might have effect on the population?
I haven't read anything about that, and I do not know it. I actually don't know much about the Wolbachia that's associated with Caponotus pennsylvanicus, but it's possible. I don't know. Yes?
Am I right that you're feeding the spore solution, or I guess it's moving the Serratia to the Caponotus workers?
No, the question was how am I actually exposing the bacteria? For exposure with the active bacteria, I expose them by pricking them through the... No, not with the serratia. And I used controls by just pricking them with a pin dipped in saline. But with the lipopolysaccharides, I was feeding it so I could avoid actually injecting a volume into them, because that has been shown to produce an immune response even with controls. Yes?
Do you know if they produce antimicrobial peptides
I'm not sure what the actual, the question was, how do the antimicrobial peptides of the innate immune system actually stop the bacteria? I'm not sure of the actual mechanism in Caponotus pennsylvanicus. Hasn't been much done on the actual proteins produced by them in response to infection, but they do produce these innate response with antimicrobial peptides after infection, at least to bacteria, we found.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.